Chicago. This is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Doug Ibendahl, Jeannie Ives, Mike Miller, Dan Johnson, Al Riley, and a report from Ohio from Dan Rivers. Our program tonight coming to you from the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. And again, we have lots to talk about this evening. And we should mention that throughout the broadcast this evening, we'll be talking about what's happening in the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, and a little bit later on in the program, we will have a representative of the Trump campaign, but not in the first hour of the broadcast this evening. But again, let's look ahead to the big Tuesday, Super Tuesday. Super Tuesday 2 is coming up, and Illinois will be in the center of the national focus, as well as other states. And here are the latest polls. This is according to NBC and Marist poll. In Illinois, in the Republican primary, Donald Trump at 34%. Ted Cruz, who will be in Chicago tomorrow, 25%. John Kasich, 21%. In fourth place, Marco Rubio at 18%. Moving now south to Florida, another big state, winner take all. Donald Trump maintains a big lead at 43%. Marco Rubio's hanging on for his life at 22%. Ted Cruz nipping at his heels, 21%. John Kasich, 9%. Also big state tomorrow, the Buckeye State. Ohio, we'll get a report on that a little bit later on the broadcast. Governor John Kasich leading at 39%. Donald Trump, again, close at 33%. Ted Cruz, 19%. And Marco Rubio, distant fourth at 6%. Now, again, the Democrats obviously are going to the polls as well. And in the big three states, let's take a look at them. Hillary Clinton in Florida leading Bernie Sanders, 61 to 34%. In Ohio, Hillary Clinton, 58 to Bernie Sanders, 38. And in Illinois, close, 51% for Hillary Clinton, 45% for Bernie Sanders. And again, it's going to be a very, very busy night on election night. And again, I'm going to mention right at the top, I'm going to invite you all to join me on WIND 560 AM. I will be anchoring election night coverage on The Answer. So we'll talk more about that a little bit later on. But again, it's Tuesday night. Wherever you're listening, AM 560, The Answer in Chicago, I'll be there. And we'll be taking telephone calls throughout the night as well. Now, the big question, the big news since we last got together, there's been a lot of news, but again, the most recent big news is what happened Friday night in Chicago. I was at the Trump rally. I'll talk about it as the program unfolds this evening. But my question to everybody, Republicans and Democrats alike, did what happened Friday night in Chicago, did it change the dynamic of this campaign? Jeannie Ives, you're supporting Ted Cruz. What happened there, and who was the big beneficiary of what happened there?
Well, when people come out and riot like that and the political correctness crowd says you can't say that and you can't do that and we're going to take over your rally, guess what? Trump was the beneficiary of that. He definitely probably came out ahead because of that rally because people are tired of it. There's blowback in Missouri where Melissa Click got fired over, you know, trying to not let people report on what happened in Missouri with the rioting there. And now, Missouri, they're down 20% in terms of student enrollment in the freshman year. People are tired of it. They're not putting up with it.
Mike Miller, you are for John Kasich. Look objective. You're a college professor. Mm-hmm. Look objectively about what you saw and what you read about. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you followed it on social media as well. Was it a really big night? And who is the beneficiary of what happened?
I think that Trump, unfortunately, is going to be the beneficiary. I think it blew up in the face of those who were going to protest. They looked foolish. Trying to stop somebody else's speech, which I think is a mistake in all cases. And however, I think it'll last only a few days because there will be something else that happens after Tuesday. If Rubio loses Florida, he's going to leave. That's going to change the whole dynamic.
Dan Johnson joins us. You are a Bernie Sanders delegate. Your reaction to what happened the other night, because Bernie Sanders was part of that story as well.
He was. I was immensely proud of our town. I'm glad somebody did what the Republican establishment has tried and failed to do and stand up to the ugliest presidential campaign we've seen in 40 years. Finally, it took Chicago to say that sort of hate speech where you say that Muslims aren't welcome, they're not Americans, Mexicans are rapists. We don't need that sort of hate speech in our body politic. I thought it was wonderful.
Al Riley, you are a Hillary Clinton supporter. Your reaction to what happened Friday night in your hometown?
Well, I think it was unfortunate, you know, but at the same time, I think that part of the Trump campaign is to reach to the lowest common denominator in terms of everything that he said. He's not talked about policy. He's engaged in ad hominem attacks on people, on different groups. And I think that what you saw was people protesting against that. Folks should not be hurt. Everybody should have, you know, have a chance to speak. But I think that the virulent nature of everything that Donald Trump has been about led to this.
Do you believe that Ted Cruz, I want to get your reaction, because Ted Cruz was one of the first to be out there, followed by Marco Rubio and then to John Kasich as well, who called it a toxic situation, that Donald Trump is toxic to the Republican Party. Do you believe that Ted Cruz made the right call? Because the initial reaction, at least if you look at reaction on Breitbart, it was very anti-Ted Cruz, because Ted Cruz was perceived to be someone that was basically blaming Trump and really was overlooking those that were taunting the Trump supporters, and maybe had taken over that rally.
Well, the truth is, when Ted Cruz came out with his first statement about the rally, he started off by saying people should not protest to shut down free speech. That's what he started. He started out blaming those protesters. And then he moved into saying this is the type of culture, however, that the Trump campaign has created, this type of atmosphere of and divisiveness and threats of violence, where even Trump himself has gone in and say, look, I'll pay for the legal bills, just take that person out. So, I mean, he has created to some degree. And, you know, here again, we have Ted Cruz leading on the proper response here, and followed by Rubio, and then finally Kasich, finally saying the same thing that Ted Cruz is, and yet Ted Cruz is the one getting the blowback for actually recognizing that you create a culture around your campaign and that that affects things.
I want to get reaction from everybody listening from coast to coast. 1-800-723-8289. Wherever you are on the political spectrum, you get a chance to weigh in on this first question, the impact of long-term impact of what happened Friday night in Chicago. Now, Dan, it didn't surprise me. You're proud of what happened.
Absolutely.
Shutting down someone's free right to speak freely. How do you address that?
Well, he didn't shut anything down. Trump ran away like a little baby 30 minutes before because he couldn't handle a bunch of college kids saying, hey, by the way, Muslims are Americans too. And by the way, everything you stand for smells a lot like 1930 or 1931 in Germany.
Should he have had a right to go into that hall and make that speech?
Everybody's got a right to say whatever they want, but you don't have any sort of constitutional freedom to make people listen to hate speech.
But if 80 to 90% of the people that go to that rally, they want to hear Trump, should they be drowned out by the 10% that filled that hall?
No, look, here's what I think. I think there's a reason why nobody's protesting Ted Cruz's events and nobody's protesting John Kasich's events, because they're not saying Muslims aren't Americans. We may disagree and think that your candidates are atrocious, but Trump's different. When you're talking about roughing people up, deporting, you know, millions of Mexicans, saying that they're rapists and murderers, guess what? The sons and daughters of those men and women, they don't take kindly to that, nor should they. That's not healthy for our
democracy. 1-800-723-8289. When we come back, we're going to pick up that discussion. We've already got callers calling in, and we'll go to them when we come back. 1-800-723-8289. From coast to coast and border to border, I'm Bruce Dumont.
Eight years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. And again, as I mentioned to you, I was at the rally at the UIC Pavilion last Friday night. And I want to offer some observations. And I can take questions about them or you can disagree with them. But again, they're my observations. So I guess you can't argue with my observations. I got to the rally. And first of all, the media check-in seemed somewhat confusing. I was a little bit surprised it wasn't a little more professional than it was. But I got into the hall, and actually I didn't have to sit with the media. I had a chance to sit in the audience with the crowd, which turned out to be a much better perspective to watch what I had. And I had a very, very good seat, I thought. But the first thing that sort of caught my eye and my sensibilities was there were an awful lot of young people there, and there were an awful lot of minorities there. And to me, it didn't feel like I was walking into a Trump rally. Now, again, I was seated with a lot of pro-Trump people, an electrician, a labor electrician with their children, and her husband was a Teamster, and a lot of, blue-collar union types. They were in the area that I was. And I was literally in the first row that was walking down very near the stage. So I had a good perspective of everything that was going on. But that was my first impression. The rock music was getting everybody really jacked up, and then the music switched to an opera. And I even said to the lady, I said, I don't think I've ever been to a political rally where they switched to opera. And then a gentleman who came out, who I did not know, he comes out and makes an announcement. He said that Donald Trump has landed in Chicago, and after consultation with law enforcement and for the safety of everyone in the hall, tonight's rally has been postponed. Then there was this huge eruption of euphoria with almost immediate chants of Bernie, Bernie. And I looked around the room, and literally I would say that a good maybe 5 to 8%, maybe even 10% of the people that were in the hall, some of whom were in the coveted area right in front of where Donald Trump was going to speak, started to cheer and began to taunt. And you used the word early, Jeannie, riot. This was not a riot. Let me clear. There was not a riot in Chicago. The Tribune today used the word sporadic scuffles. I think that describes it, sporadic scuffles. If you've ever been to a Cubs-White Sox game in Chicago, there are sporadic scuffles that break out. And that's basically what happened.
Especially
there was some pushing.
Side.
There was some shoving. The only fists that I saw flying were against people who were for Trump. There were those that were clearly in the audience. They got into shouting matches. Things got very, very heated. But the punches that I saw thrown were thrown by people that came into that rally to disrupt the rally, not by the Trump people. I didn't see any of that from my perspective, and I was looking all around. I was in a very frustrated situation because having made it there, and anyone that's got an iPhone will know, I was in this great moment in U.S. political history, and it was unfolding before my very eyes, and I had about 5% on my iPhone. So I was a little bit frustrated. But here is one piece of video that I did receive, and you'll see how close I was to the podium. This was also a video that, again, received a lot of exposure mm-hmm. all over the world. Let's take a look at that. Again, for the people on radio, I'm sorry, but we're going to show it to our TV folks. Roll it. This was a gentleman who stormed the stage. He turned out later to be identified as someone who was very active in the Black Lives Matter movement. And then it was very surprising to me that about 15 minutes later, that same guy had snuck back in the rally, had a hoodie on at that point, but it was the same guy. And he was able to make quite a show for himself. And there were several other pockets. But again, you could see pockets of skirmishes that were happening. I did not see a lot of fist fights. I really didn't. I saw punches thrown. I didn't see anything. I've seen worse fights at a hockey game in the stands, okay? So I want to put it in context. Now, Now, when, by the way, I should mention that when I walked in, there was an announcement made, and it was made several times over the loudspeaker, that everyone is there to exercise their right of free speech. That point was made. It was warned to everyone that if there's any disruption in the audience, you're to start yelling Trump, 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 and security forces will take the protesters out. That was the responsibility. So everyone was told to keep cool. Everyone was there to have a good time, to celebrate the First Amendment. But that announcement was made over and over again. When the announcement was made again, that's when everybody knew. And then there were chants, you know, shut it down, we shut it down, we shut it down. What followed that also was some chants inside. But again, it was exacerbated to a larger extent when you walked outside of the UIC pavilion. And that's where profanity and where the taunts mm-hmm. really picked mm-hmm. up. F Trump was just chanted throughout. There were T-shirts talking about F Trump that were being sold by the people on the street. Some of the vendors on the street. At that particular point, it was a clear taunting from the protesters, and as the Trump people walked back, they walked north on Racine, going over the Eisenhower Expressway. There were literally people, and I was in the. There were literally people screaming in a person's face. They were saying "F Trump," and the other chant that broke out: "Go back to suburbia. Go back to the suburbs. Back to the suburbs." As everyone was flowing back, probably to the suburbs. At that point, I observed that some demonstrators had gone down onto Eisenhower Expressway. They had blocked Eisenhower Expressway. So they weren't letting people go by at all. And then at the corner, I want to say, it's the first street, I forgot the name of the street, but again, it was also seen on television. That's where the officer that you saw bloodied, that's where he was. I saw him. And also the chants that were going on at that particular point were all, I mean, you could sense there was going to be fights that were breaking out. I didn't see any fights break out at that point, but I did see the constant taunting of the Trump supporters by the protesters. And by the way, the protesters, they also had inside, they had Bernie Sanders sign. They were chanting Bernie, Bernie. And when I originally arrived at the UIC pavilion, when I was waiting through the press area, and I was also waited through the demonstrators itself, I was also there was somebody there that saying if the socialist press check-in, there was a socialist press check-in area, which I didn't use. I use the regular press check area. But that was the observation.
That is
amazing. And my observation would also be that when I was there, on the outside, a significant number of people outside, I don't say it was 50-50, but I would say it was maybe 60-40. 60% were inside. I mean, the people that were outside almost outnumbered the people that were inside. And that's my observation. But again, it was not a riot. My immediate reaction is that whatever violence I saw, there were punches thrown. Some of them landed, some of them didn't land, but that's what I saw. Again, in my view, you had a situation where people on the inside came a long way. They waited a long time to hear their candidate. They were frustrated. And the other point is, and this is an important thing to remember, when a campaign decides to have a rally in one of the largest sanctuary cities in the United States, on a campus that has hired Bill Ayers as a professor, and a university that has a large minority population, you shouldn't be surprised that you're going to tick off a lot of people. The frustration boiled up. It was a combination of MoveOn.org, some people that were supporting of Bernie Sanders. Congressman Luis Gutierrez was an integral part of organizing that, as well as several progressive-related organizations in Chicago that are frustrated, as Dan said, by the rhetoric of Donald Trump. All of that unfolded there. Had this rally been in Hoffman Estates, it wouldn't have happened. Right. But again, someone decided.
So Donald Trump's not allowed to come into Chicago? Is that what I'm hearing?
No, what I'm saying is that insofar as that is concerned, that's what happened. When the access to the hall is determined by online registration, and then you would print out your ticket. Mm-hmm. So the Donald Trump campaign has the email addresses of a lot of the people that disrupted that rally. And this is something else. This auditorium held 9,000 people. Donald Trump said they turned away 25. He was talking about 25,000. Then he said there was an effort by his campaign later in the day to tell people not to come. It should be relatively easy to determine whether or not anyone received an email from the Donald Trump campaign telling him not to come.
Right.
But, you know, he's always talking about the size of his audience. And in this particular case, you're issuing more tickets than the auditorium will hold. What's that about?
So he says,
every modern ticketing online device, you put a number on there, it stops. They don't issue any more tickets after you get to a particular point. So again, it gets to me. The question I'm bringing up is: there some organizational issues that I think that can be reviewed? And the other thing that reminded me, and I have covered Illinois politics for a long time, it reminds me of an incident that took place in 1983 when Harold Washington was trying to campaign to be the first African-American mayor. On Palm Sunday, he went to St. Paschal's Catholic Church on the northwest side, an all-white neighborhood. And there were supporters of Bernie Ebden, the Republican candidate. And they knew he was going to be there. And they set up, they were chanting, and they had placards. And the campaign for Harold Washington, they deliberately took Harold Washington right into that pit, if you will. They got the video they wanted because what was shown on television were screaming, yelling, Northwest Side, ethnic whites, screaming at a man that wanted to be the mayor of the city of Chicago. That defined that campaign. But again, that campaign deliberately took Harold Washington into that place because they wanted the video that they got. And I'm not saying,
Bruce.
I'm suggesting that maybe that was a goal the other night about what happened at the UIC Pavilion on Friday night. The Trump campaign has every reason to say, hey, we canceled it. They did. But they also set it up. Back Shirley from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago again, 1-800-723-8289. I didn't want to monopolize that segment, but I wanted to lay it out there in context for people that have questions. And you have some questions or comments, Gene?
Yeah, I think it's kind of – you alluded to the fact perhaps Trump set this up as a photo op, as a way to stage the protest so that he could get the information. It's an interesting thought.
I don't mean to suggest that it was set up. All I'm just saying is that, you know, when you put all the pieces of this together – there's a way that all of these things could have been avoided. There was a way that, you know, when you're giving free tickets to college students to come see Donald Trump on a campus that is very politically left and very diverse, why be surprised that kids aren't smart enough to know how you break the system? And that's what
it's not like it was a secret. There were open Facebook posts. It was all organic.
Everybody knew there was going to be a protest.
So
they shouldn't have been surprised by anything.
Right.
And by the way, the other point is the person that came out that made the announcement said that Donald Trump had landed in Chicago and had spoken with local law enforcement.
So which is not true, Bruce.
This is interesting.
It was not, exactly. You know what they say about prior planning.
Right.
Bad planning. But at the same time, when that's coupled with spins and lies about what you had planned on doing, then you lose credibility. Maybe they should have known these things. I think you mentioned some things earlier that may not necessarily have had a connection. But I just really think that, you know, it was a cauldron that was about to boil over.
Yes.
And he should have known that. He should have known that. But then to turn around and say and give legitimacy to something that did not happen, law enforcement told me to cancel, I just think that that's that was reprehensible on its face.
The classlessness of the young people. I'm in a university. I have been there for 36 years. I follow the antics of universities on websites and so forth religiously. And their behavior of these young people trying to stop someone else's speech because they don't like it is part and parcel of everything that is happening on university campuses right now. And it isn't both ways. It isn't young people being foolish. It is young leftist students being foolish.
And it's
adults. You'll never find a case where a Palestinian speaker comes to a campus or somebody who's on the left comes to the campus and the students on the right shut them down.
You know,
never happens.
It's interesting.
It happens all the time when an Israeli speaks or some conservative speaks. They throw pies. They disrupt. They take over the
I remember,
because they think they have the right to.
I just tell Condoleezza Rice she can't come in and
talk. It's a John Kasich guy. Yeah. I just saw, I thought, one of the best political ads of the season, and I just reviewed it, when John Kasich had an Air Force colonel come out and reread sort of that German Protestant priest or pastor, rather, said, look, right, you know, the rise of Hitler, when they first came for, you know, I'm going to butcher it too, but this is a John Kasich paid for hard money political advertisement. So the question is, because every Republican candidate has said what Donald Trump is doing is disgusting. It is an abomination of the Republic.
He has we'll protect his right to the nth degree to make the speech that he wants to make. We're fine with that. People have the ability and the capability to make the decision. The problem on the campuses are the adults are allowing this to happen. Are you telling me UIC had no control? They absolutely.
This was a Trump rally, and Bruce was right.
It was a Trump rally. It was at UIC,
So are you really okay with the leading Republican presidential candidate saying, you know what we should do when we execute Muslims?
No.
We should dip the bullets in
pigs'
blood.
We're not saying that that's okay.
But
we're
you know what you're doing about it?
I'm coming.
You're not doing anything about it.
I'm here advocating.
Absolutely.
We're supporting somebody else, but we understand that he has the right to say that. You guys, the intolerance.
In fact, there are limits
to the rights
of what people can say.
Quote, unquote, tolerant left. There are not limits.
Wait a minute. This is a new interpretation of the First Amendment. Go ahead.
That's the thing. There are no First Amendment. What do you think it is to say Muslims hate America? Those are fighting words.
I will tell you this. I know exactly the difference.
If somebody said, you know what, I think these radical Christians like Timothy McVeigh that have blown up Oklahoma City, what we ought to do with Christians is we ought to crucify them.
Okay, fine.
You really think
much of the conversation
is not a specific threat against a specific person, then you're okay.
Let's let Al Riley talk.
There's times to be partisan, and this is going to be a partisan debate too. There's also times to look at reality. This isn't just a characteristic of the right, of the left.
It is. And university campuses,
then we
it
just,
is.
Then we just,
I live
we just
that.
Have a,
don't tell
wait,
me.
Wait a second. For one thing, don't act like no one else has been on a college campus.
I didn't or say no, you weren't on a college
All right,
campus.
You said I'm on a college campus. I know. Many of us have been on college campuses, and we know. Some of the, not necessarily been rallies, but there's been all kinds of hate speech and people,
What is hate speech?
My God.
Hate speech is.
Tell me what hate speech is.
What is hate speech?
Hate speech is.
No. I asked Al.
Okay.
Al, what is hate speech?
Give me some hate speech. Well, I think hate speech is something like hanging a noose in front of a college dormitory to scare some of the minorities that were living there. That's hate speech.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it, but that doesn't mean, number one, that
Did
it's right
up
or that
on
people.
On that case, by the way, you I know that that was a string from a balloon. It wasn't a noose.
You're going to
there was a case.
First of all, wait a minute. First of all,
there was such a case.
There were a lot of cases. There are a lot of cases. There's a lot of cases with fraternities and sororities
in their own
who have been
private
put
time.
Who have been put
does
upon.
Does a person? And I want to go back to what you said.
So, I mean, let's
in this particular case. Donald Trump, when he announced, said he wanted to build a wall, and he made the observation that many of the people that were coming from Mexico were rapists and murderers, men. Or then he came back and some are good ones. He didn't say all of them, But again, that was certainly the impression. That's certainly the way it's been done.
That's right.
And because of that, everyone thought that, oh, my God, no one is going to support this guy. Then people began to support the guy. Then he talked about building a wall. And then he started to win primaries and win caucuses. So my question is, when someone steps up in the political world and decides to say something serious, just like Bernie Sanders, I've said one of the reasons why Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are gathering so much support is that they are politicians that are saying something.
Right.
They're saying something against the norm. And some of the things that Bernie Sanders has said for conservatives, they think are against the norm. But the point is, you have candidates that are out there saying these things. They're gathering support. At what point do you think it becomes hate speech?
Here's the sad
part.
You're
basically saying that everyone that supports Donald Trump is a hater and a bigot.
That's not what
some people are furious that our southern border is so open and that we have been so devoid of protecting our southern border and that we have many large cities in the United States that violate federal law, sanctuary cities, and people are pissed off.
Isn't there a way to talk about?
I think there are two things. There's nothing wrong with 80% of what Donald Trump says. Absolutely not. There's nothing wrong with saying he wants a wall. There's nothing wrong with that. I think it's a horrible policy, and the only wall we should be building is a seawall around our coast so we don't drown from global warming. Okay. But there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with him to advocate for that, right? And there is a reason why Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders are surging. And partially it's because they're the only two that are opposed to these trade deals that are really depressing the median wage. Here's the problem with Donald Trump. And you know what? Where
Donald
I get it
Trump's
from?
Opposed to
I
it
get
too.
It from Ted Cruz. His mouth, and I get it from John Kasich's mouth, and I get it from Marco Rubio's mouth. What he's saying is dangerous.
But
when
not
he says that
he
Muslims
can't say
are
it.
Against America,
the
Muslims
is,
hate America, that is dangerous
why
and
is
wrong.
That
Dan,
right?
You cannot
because
be
it
the
is
speech
appallingly
police.
Wrong. For the first
Jeannie part, Ives, Jeannie Ives.
Dan, you can't be the speech police. Are you going to be the arbiter of all the speeches in the future? Are you going to fact check and go through everybody's speech before they say it? You can't be the arbiter. That is left to law. And that's the best thing about Ted Cruz. Like him or hate him, liberal, moderate, conservative, the one thing you know about Ted Cruz is he's a constitutionalist and he believes in rule by law, not rule by men. And that's the huge reason that I'm supporting him.
Bruce,
we're going to go to calls.
Well,
Al, go ahead.
Let me just get it. There is a difference, you know, between all of these people. First of all, I'm not hardly trying to help, you know, the Republican presidential candidates. But I think there's a big difference between most of them and the kinds of things that Donald Trump is saying. Now, you're talking about Trump emerging and he's gaining. Trump's been on TV for 25 years.
Right.
I mean, much of his name recognition comes from the fact that people have watched him. He had a USFL team.
He's a celebrity.
He's a celebrity.
Right.
I'm not so sure that we should be trying to attribute his popularity necessarily to the fact that he's a great statesman.
He's not a great statesman. I don't think anyone's going to accuse him of being a great statesman.
I'm saying that.
He's
never
a phrase maker, and some of his phrases get taken way out of context. Some of them get taken into context. And by the way, I think another thing that's
The president is a Kenyan. That was pretty easy to understand.
Way beyond the pale. I totally agree with that. I do think that, this is what Donald Trump is an important figure. We recognized him as an important figure and as a vehicle on this program, you know, 8 or 9 months ago. Okay, we're not Johnny Come Latelys. Oh my God!
But it doesn't matter what we recognize. No. The statistics show that he's winning. Everybody recognizes him.
But my point is that when they played the number of quotes back today, things that he said at rallies that could be perceived as
inciting
or condoning violence, that hurts his case. And he doubled down on some of those points today, as opposed to being in a situation. And I'm always wondering when the day is going to come that after Donald Trump has said something that that many have thought is outrageous, I'm waiting for the time that he comes forward and puts things into context, lowers the decibel level, and moves on, because what happened Friday night, I think it was a big plus for Donald Trump.
Absolutely.
What happened the following day in the speeches in Kansas City and Dayton and Cleveland, he took what was potentially a good situation, wrapping himself in the First Amendment, and then he went off half-cocked on a variety of other things and bringing up ISIS and the guy that charged the stage. He went off the deep end again. He keeps doing that, and I think it hurts his long-term cause and his electability. And by the way, his electability, in my view, is still not dead in the water. It's still alive and well. We'll talk about it when we come back.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amling's now at 888-880-TREE.
8 years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. The events last Friday at the UIC Pavilion in Chicago gave all the networks an opportunity to go to their files and bring out the pictures of the Democratic Convention and police riots in 1968 on the streets of Chicago. In my view, there is no direct comparison other than there were streets, there was demonstrations. It was an entirely different situation. And also because this event on Friday night was really about campaigns. There's a lot of things that happens in campaigns. And the thing that concerns me, and I think the truer comparison, is the 1972 convention or campaign when George Wallace was competing in the Democratic primary, saying many of the things about protesters that Donald Trump has said. In fact, at one point, Governor Wallace had said that if any protesters got in front of his car, they better watch out because he was going to drive over them. So there were things that were being said, and the tone of that campaign was similar to what we are hearing now. And I will say that, and maybe this is something you shouldn't say on radio, I'm worried about the tone of the campaign. Because in the past, when campaigns have gotten too heated in this country, somebody gets shot. And I'm worried about that. Perhaps I shouldn't say it. But I would worry for Donald Trump's life. I really would. And I would say the same thing perhaps for other candidates to a lesser degree. But people who say things that are going to have a dramatic change in lives, and when you're talking about the emotions that are involved, I'm fearful of Donald Trump for Donald Trump's life. Let's go to Sam, listening to us on WRNN in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Yes, Bruce. I think the events in Chicago perfectly exposed the left this week, and it showed the hypocrisy that goes on. The video showed exactly what you said, that it was Trump supporters that were attacked. Trump had been saying this. You have a situation where the media, it shows why people are so fed up and support Trump. This narrative that Trump supporters, and I called in last July, by the way, to say I thought he was going to be the next president. His supporters are painted to be bigots, racist, and intolerant. But you don't see Trump supporters shutting down Clinton and Sanders rallies. So who are the bigots? And these people who are upset that Donald Trump would stop the cheap labor and cheap votes and driving down wages by stopping these immigrants from coming across the border and changing our country forever. They support illegal immigrants coming into this country and us having to take care of them and their families, but they don't support the right of a U.S. citizen to campaign at a publicly funded university in the United States of America. Once again, hypocrisy. So you tell me who the real bigots, the real racists, and the real intolerant people are. And I want your panel to address that.
Dan, go ahead.
Sam, I'd be delighted to. Do you think it's okay for Donald Trump to say that Islam hates America? Do you think that's okay?
I think that there is a large segment of Islam that does hate America.
Okay. Well, that's like saying Christianity hates America.
That at least 20% support beheadings or whatever means necessary, killing the infidels.
Muslim Americans?
People hate America?
Not American.
Yeah, so just like Marco Rubio said.
Afghanistan and Pakistan, it's 80, 90%.
Okay, just like Marco Rubio said, how can Donald Trump, just like Marco Rubio said the last debate, how can Donald Trump look in the face of a Muslim American serviceman who's willing to die for a country, who has died for a country? You can go to Arlington Cemetery, and there's the crescent on some of those gravestones.
I will go further. I will say that Donald Trump, yes, I believe his life's in danger because there's trillions of dollars at stake and people want him off the stage. Okay? I will say that. I think that Donald Trump, if you look at, he is a messenger. He comes out, he talks about illegal immigration, Kate Steinle situation. He talks about plants moving to Mexico, Nabisco, Ford, Carrier, all these companies that, they move.
Sam, we've got to move on. Jimmy, we're going to move to Jimmy. You're listening to us online in Warren, Ohio. Go ahead. Nice to hear from the Buckeye State. Go ahead.
Hi, Bruce. Thanks for having me on. You know, I'm a young man. I live in Youngstown, Ohio. I'm 23 years old, and I've been noticing, Mr. DeMont, that my country, it's being gradually, it's being destroyed, dismantled piece by piece, day by day. And if we, Americans don't rally behind Donald Trump, our government will be transferred into a world government dictatorship. This is the ultimate plan, and Donald Trump is a threat to this new world order group. He is the only candidate that's independent from these international banksters, and we have to support him. And let me say something to your leftist guest. You know, all these universities today are Marxist incubation centers. They're disgusting. You don't learn anything, whether it's the LGBT rights or the multiculturalism or the diversity. These are all agendas to undermine whites, to make whites a minority in their country, so to undermine our political power.
And wait a minute. Wait, Jimmy, hold up right there.
You might have had a point until you went there.
So, Jimmy, what I heard you just say is that there's something wrong if there are minorities that end up, demographically speaking, making white people a minority in America. Like, that is a problem for you. Is that what you just said?
Hey, I have a question for you. Why can Israel protect their borders and their racial ethnicity, but why can't America do it? Well, how come all of you so-called conservatives and leftists allow Israel to protect their Jewish heritage, their Jewish national identity, but white Americans can't? Why?
Jimmy, listen, I mean this sincerely. I'm not trying to make fun of you or anything. The reason I love talk radio is because it gets issues out in the open. What you're just saying, and you honestly believe it, is why people call some Trump supporters fundamentally racist. Because what you just did is you equated the United States of America with white people. And that is so un-American, it boggles my mind.
So let me ask you a question. Will you condemn the Jewish supremacists that want to keep Israel ethnically Jewish? Will you condemn them?
You know what I happen to think? I think it's wonderful. We're a secular country. Mm-hmm. It's in the First Amendment. If Israel wants to be a religious country, look, I'm not Israeli. I'm American. I think that one of the best things about this country is we respect every American with the same rights, no matter your creed. And what Donald Trump is saying is fundamentally un-American.
What that post showed, though, is that you can't talk about
it. We've got to say farewell.
Read the Constitution, my friend.
We got to say farewell to you, Jimmy. Thanks for listening to us online. And again, when we come back, a little bit later on in the program, we're going to hear from Dan Rivers from WKBN in Youngstown, Ohio. Find out what's happening in the Buckeye State. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City.
at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight, we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair, see Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv.
8 years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv. Bruce Dumont back, and we're coming to you from Chicago. Illinois is one of the states that's going to be voting on Tuesday. And again, we had early voting right here at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, right downstairs, and all the polling booths are all, voting machines are all tied up, ready to be picked up tomorrow because it's over. But it is the largest turnout of early voting in the history of Illinois. It's going on, breaking rules everywhere, or not rules, but maybe breaking rules. I meant breaking.
Let me be crystal clear. About that.
Voting machines. No voting machines.
No voting machines. I meant they're setting new records when they're not breaking rules. My question is, we're going to talk a little bit about the Democrats now, because the Illinois primary, Hillary Clinton 51%, Bernie Sanders 45%. That's the NBC Marist poll. Al, mm-hmm. Should it be that close in her home state?
We're coming.
Well, put it like this. I think that the first thing I'd like to say is that the candidates on the Democratic side, I think, have all comported themselves, you know, very well. And I think, you know, a lot of people would be happy with whoever – I'm speaking, please – whoever, you know, would be the nominee. Now, I am a delegate for Hillary. I don't have a problem because she still is in the lead, and it's beyond the margin of error. So I think that we'll see on Tuesday, you know, that the best candidate will win.
Are you absolutely confident that those supporters of Bernie Sanders, some of whom were in the streets and the rallies around Trump the other day, they will come home to support Hillary Clinton? You're confident of that?
Well, she has a nice amount of support right now. As I say, she's in the lead. Many polls, and, you know, I'm a statistician. There are many polls that show a lot of different things. I don't know how they took their sampling frame. I don't know. You know, some of these polls that are coming out have tremendous margins of error. When you come this close to the end of a campaign, those margins of error should be low. So it really depends on what poll you're looking at. Some of the polls have large amounts of undecideds even a couple of days before the election. But I think many of them will, in fact, come home, as you say, and come and vote for Hillary Clinton. But it will be close.
Dan Johnson, is it this close or is it closer?
I think it's close. I think it's a surge. And I was sort of, I'll admit, I was shocked by Michigan. I didn't expect that we were going to win Michigan, and I sort of bought into the narrative that this thing's, you know, almost over.
Mm-hmm.
And the movement in the last week or two has been, you know, energizing and surprising. So I think there's a real shot that people are going to come out that traditionally don't, and they're going to vote for Bernie, and I think there's a shot. I think there's a good shot we win Illinois.
Well, there's an old adage. If you want to know who's going to win a campaign, watch where the candidates are leading up. And now, again, Hillary Clinton is coming back to Chicago again.
Tomorrow. Yes. Big rally on the west side.
Bernie, go ahead. Where is it going to be?
Plumbers Hall.
Plumbers Hall on the
west side of Chicago.
Hillary is coming back here again.
Bernie's coming back. You know, with all due respect to my friend, Leader Al Riley, that big rally at Plumbers Hall, maybe it fits 800 or 1,000. But we're going to the Auditorium Theater Monday night that seats almost 4,000, and I think we're going to fill it.
Dan, that just happens to be where this particular rally is going to be. It's not a question. Come on.
I'm not sure about that. That's the point. I'm not sure about that. I think the excitement is with Bernie.
You don't think that she could fill up
the hall. I think it's clear. The excitement, the energy is with the Sanders campaign.
But my point is, this is the third time in like 5 days he's coming back. He was downstate in Champaign. This is the third time he's coming back here.
Illinois is very important.
And Ted Cruz is coming back here
yes,
tomorrow.
Yes, Ted Cruz has five stops. Ted has five stops in Illinois. Yep. Rockford. He's going to start in Rockford in the morning. He's coming out to Glen Ellen. I'll be on the stage with him at 12:30 at the Abington Banquet Hall on Butterfield Road in Glen Ellen. Then he's headed to Peoria, Decatur, and then he ends up in Springfield at about 10:30 at night. So he's got a five stops in Illinois, and I'm excited about that.
Kasich has been here, but he's not coming back.
No, he's focusing almost on Ohio. Because if he loses Ohio,
it's over.
That's correct. But I tell you, speaking from the other side, I think there's been a lot going on with Republicans. I get that. It's been fun. Mm-hmm. But I think people are missing a lot of the story of what's going on the Democratic side. You have two people. One is a socialist. And we've had Dave Lundy's a regular guest on here. And Lundy says, he's a socialist, for heaven's sake. Don't you understand you can't elect a socialist? And then Hillary, what happened this week? No, we didn't mention it at all.
Yeah, that's right.
They gave the person who set up her homebrew server, gave him immunity from prosecution so he can tell exactly what happened with that particular server, who had access to it, how many times it may have been adjusted.
Is that the same server Condoleezza Rice had? Or was it the same one that Colin Powell had?
Or is
that
the one that every secretary said he had a server? I have classified documents on the private server.
That is a terrible indictment.
Talking points don't mean that much a couple of days before the election.
Yeah.
That's not a talking point.
All of those things have been vetted.
They haven't been vetted.
But again,
otherwise, the FBI wouldn't be looking at it.
I want to get your reaction to this because it was already alluded. It was mentioned on this program about 2 months ago. It was mentioned by Chuck Todd today, a little bit behind the curve. It's the role that Rahm Emanuel is playing or isn't playing in Chicago. To those around the country, Rahm Emanuel at the moment is anathema to many in Chicago, certainly a large percentage of African Americans.
That's right.
I have heard a delegate from Bernie Sanders make the point that because Rahm is her top surrogate in Illinois, that a vote against her is a vote against Rahm Emanuel. And if you want to send Rahm Emanuel a message, the way to do it is to vote for Bernie Sanders. Now, my question to you is, because there's been a lot said about that Bernie Sanders doesn't have significant black support. But in Chicago, he may have a significant amount of support. Would you acknowledge that because of the association to Rahm Emanuel and Laquan McDonald?
Well, again, all of these things someone said, and someone said
well,
this,
just said
and
it.
Someone. Well, yeah.
Other people
well,
have said
you're
it.
Someone.
Well,
a lot
but
of people,
a lot of people,
a lot
said
of people have said a lot of things. I mean, some people are saying that Rahm Emanuel is not necessarily her largest surrogate in the state of Illinois. She has a lot of people. A lot of
He's
people.
He's the most powerful, isn't he?
Well, that may be, but my point is still my point. There's a lot of people that say that he is not her surrogate or her largest surrogate. She's got an awful lot of support. She's got an awful lot of support from a lot of different areas.
How are you playing the Rahm Emanuel card with supporters for Bernie Sanders? Bernie Sanders took a shot at
Sanders' campaign
the other night.
Is running commercials in Illinois and Chicago.
Right.
And Bernie has made it clear, you know, I'm glad I don't want Rahm Emanuel's endorsement. So I think you're right. The Sanders campaign is making a decision. They are aggressively trying to tie Rahm to Hillary, which is, you know, a fair thing to do.
Well, a campaign tactic.
It's a campaign tactic. It may be fair, but to make these statements and say this is true, just like some of the other statements about who has African-American support and who doesn't. I mean, you know, that's a nice way to start off a conversation or an argument.
I'll be honest
but
with you.
Jesse but the Jack- fact of the Jesse matter- Jackson welcomed Bernie Sanders to Operation Push yesterday.
Jesse Jackson welcomes a lot of people.
That's right.
From my viewpoint, though, when you're looking at Democrats in Illinois, especially in Southern Democrats who are largely conservative and largely concerned about coal and energy, you know, Bernie and Hillary don't play with them well at all. I wouldn't be surprised if we had crossover votes into the Republicans and maybe for a Trump.
Would anybody be surprised if Hillary lost Illinois?
Wouldn't be surprised.
No, not one bit.
Only this week.
I expect it.
Only this week.
Back shortly from Chicago, but we'll come back with a report from Youngstown, Ohio. Donald Trump's going to be there tomorrow night.
Eight years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, and again, every single time there's an election, the world focuses on Ohio, and joining us now is Dan Rivers, and he is the morning talk show host, our mid-morning talk show host on WKBN, our affiliate in Youngstown. And Dan, you know the political climate there in eastern Ohio. Welcome to Be on the Beltway. Nice to have you with us.
Hey, Bruce, what's happening?
At this particular moment, I'm going to ask you what's happening because I know Donald Trump is going to end his campaign in Ohio tomorrow night with a rally in Youngstown. What has been the reaction thus far for people that you've run into on the street to the rallies that have taken place in Ohio, as well as the rally that was postponed in Chicago the other night? Is that likely to have a play a significant role and maybe turn increase his turnout, or do you think John Kasich has it wrapped up?
No, I think it's going to be a big night tomorrow night, and they just announced that this afternoon. And Donald Trump coming into Youngstown Warren Regional Airport tomorrow night, and we're actually getting a lot of attention. As you know, your friend Dave Johnson over at the Spread Eagle, he's hosting John Kasich tonight, mm-hmm. and then Rob Portman's going to be with Jim Tressel and John Kasich at Brylex Industry here in town tomorrow morning at 10. Hillary was here last night with Sherrod Brown and Tim Ryan, which it all seemed kind of low-key to me. But tomorrow night is sure to be a big one. I'm sure that we'll probably try to stream the audio from Trump because people will want to hear that tomorrow night. And I just think there's a lot of excitement about Donald Trump. Although I think it's one of the things that comes up is on the show a lot is how do you defend what Trump says? So that's the issue out there. If you had to, on a daily basis, defend Donald Trump, that might be pretty hard to do.
Can you give us an assessment of the strength of Ted Cruz in that neck of the woods? And we should mention, by the way, that Youngstown is one of the most liberal. Mahoning County is one of the most liberal, pro-democratic counties in the state. Although you are right next to Columbiana County, which is one of the most Republican counties, whose chair is Dave Johnson, who you just referenced.
Yeah, the strength of Ted Cruz is pretty strong on my show. I do have a lot of people out there. The strategy is, let's go ahead and vote for John Kasich because it won't hurt Ted Cruz and might hurt Donald Trump. But most of my text messages and email on a daily basis are people out there saying, Donald Trump is what we need. Don't stand in the way of Donald Trump. And I just see that on a daily basis of his power. Although there is a good group out there that likes Ted Cruz, I got to remind you that John Kasich is pretty popular. He won, what did he win, 87? He won 87 out of 88 counties. Yeah.
Won by 30%.
He has an 80% popularity rating right now.
Here's a question, Dan, that has always kind of confused me about John Kasich, because he was a supporter of NAFTA. And yet every 4 years when you and I talk about Ohio politics, there is the remnants of Democratic labor movement in Mahoning County, which vehemently opposed NAFTA. And Hillary tried to be on both sides of it, you know, when she ran against Barack Obama. And whenever Barack Obama goes into Ohio, he's asked about that, even though there hasn't been any significant change about it. And yet, so a lot of people seem to be upset about NAFTA even now. But John Kasich supported it, and he won re-election by 30%. So is it big issue, or is it an issue that the media talks about but that doesn't mean anything anymore?
Yeah, I remember when George Voinovich was a senator years ago, he told me 1 in 5 jobs in Ohio depend on NAFTA. I think that is probably where the smart money is. A lot of people out here, they really don't believe that you're going to take apart these trade agreements like Trump is saying. And John Kasich is always taking the high road and says, hey, let's have an adult conversation about trade. Let's have it about immigration. I think that people out there, you know, here's the deal. Kasich is very popular, but I don't think he's as popular as Cruz and Trump. That's the, you know, outside of Ohio. I just looked at the polls tonight. And
well, he definitely isn't outside of Ohio. But again, I think that's sort of significant news if you think he's maybe even running even with them right now, because the polls suggest that, you know, Trump is within just a couple of points.
Actually, the latest poll I have, Bruce, is dead even here in Ohio.
Okay.
And I think, John Kasich is actually going to be, spending tight. Just outside of town.
What poll is that, by the way? Because that hasn't gotten a lot of national exposure. What poll is that has them tied at the moment?
I wish my iPad just went down, and I just read it before because it was 3 or 4 points the other way with Kasich leading. But I just looked at this tonight, and it said that they're dead even here in Ohio. Did I write that down here? I'm not sure.
Jeannie Ives is here, and again, one of the things that's been reported by Newsmax late in the day is that a lot of polls in a number of states, there's a big surge that's going to Ted Cruz. Go ahead, Jeannie.
Dan, my question is, Ohio, you know, obviously somebody who wear jobs and union jobs and industrial jobs mean a lot. Do you find that the conversations changed in terms of the election, where it's more about the economy and immigration's impact on the economy versus really kind of foreign policy, which I think is now kind of put to the side? What do you find in Ohio?
I would have said a couple of months ago my topics were ISIS related, but now people are talking more and more about the jobs here and immigration. And I think to tell you the truth, Jeannie, I've been going to Washington for 6 years talking about immigration. So when Trump brought this up and said he's the first guy to talk about immigration, I was like, you got to be kidding me. There's a whole cadre of people have been talking about immigration. Right. But people here constantly say, who would do the job? It's more the adult conversation out here. Who's going to do these jobs if, in fact, we don't have a strong immigration policy? And also the fence out there. I don't think there's too many people that believe that building that fence is going to make much difference, because most people are overstaying visas. But I got to tell you one thing. Donald Trump, on a daily basis, gets a lot of attention almost everywhere and here in Ohio. One thing that you guys made, I don't know, were you aware of this, that Bruce, we've got the early vote here now. They're going to give the 17-year-olds the right to vote on Tuesday.
Bernie Sanders sued to make that happen, right?
Al Riley is here. He is a state representative and a assistant majority leader of the Illinois House. And for Hillary Clinton.
That's correct. Dan, tell me something about that rally, though. You said Sherrod Brown was there, and Sherrod Brown really espouses a lot of issues that I think that galvanize a lot of people in the Democratic Party, especially with regard to job training. What kind of rally was it?
It's kind of a high tech company. It's an M7. It's called M7, and Sherrod Brown and Tim Ryan were there last night. But the interesting
he's the congressman from your area.
Yeah, from my area. But the interesting thing about Sherrod Brown, when he was elected, I don't know if it was in fourth or fifth year now, he said the first thing he's elected, he's going to take apart NAFTA. And he has really never answered that question as to whether he's going to, when he's going to do that. But, yeah, they talked. Last night, I got to tell you, the rally was more about, hey, we got to keep this going. We got to keep the Obama administration going. And I got to tell you what, that one just doesn't, that's not playing here right now. It really isn't.
Mike Miller is for John Kasich. And Mike, are you a little bit surprised that the polls, according to Dan, are now even with John Kasich in Ohio?
I know this sounds weird because I happen to support him. I just think he is head and shoulders above anybody else in the Republican field in terms of his electability in November. That I've talked to, being in a university, I'm surrounded by lots of liberals. And the one person they say they absolutely fear would be the Republican nominee is John Kasich, because they know many Democrats would move over to vote for him and that he would win. And I guess I'm just shocked that he's having this much trouble.
Is the issue with him excitability, that no one is really excited? In other words, there's a cerebral support for him, but it doesn't make your blood boil.
Yeah, and really, I mean, Cruz can turn a phrase very quickly. It takes John a lot longer to get his point out. And, you know, I think that maybe sometimes when you go back and you say you're the son of the mailman and, you know, the thing that he's done and how he's been there and done that, and people just don't believe that anymore. He's very popular here in the state, but I'm going to say that there's also some other issues out here. You know, John Kasich, a lot of people think that he forced a lot of these, you know, the Rainy Day Fund, which is over $1.3 billion here in Ohio. When he took over, there was an $8 billion deficit. Well, a lot of people blame him for taking that away from local government funds. However, there's more and more federal or more state employees under Kasich than there were before John Kasich, so that doesn't really hunt either. But I just go back and think, why isn't John Kasich more exciting and more loved? It's just that it's kind of a tried and true, and when you put him up against Cruz and even Rubio and all these other guys, maybe he just doesn't communicate as well.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can think of.
I think that's part of it.
Even though he has the experience, he has the wisdom, he has everything that some of the other candidates don't have.
Right. He's
I would say this, too, about John Kasich. John Kasich is a guy that we often have this conversation. We are so blessed to have a guy like Kasich, Cruz, even Trump. We could live with any of them. Most of my people out there and myself personally believe that Cruz would be ready to job day one. He would do exactly what he says.
Yep.
John Kasich could do the same. I think Donald Trump would be a guy that would do a lot of on-the-job learning.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, we're going to have you call the state in the Democratic primary. Who's going to win the Democratic primary Tuesday, in your view?
Oh, you know, Hillary always does well here. She's very popular here in Ohio for some reason. And the 17-year-old vote could sway it, but Hillary in the past, voters of although she looked a little bit weary last night, but who wouldn't be after being on this deal? They didn't speak until 10 o'clock last night, and people were standing in line, and when they came back, I didn't think the crowd was very excited.
Here we go. Drum roll. Who's going to win the Republican primary? Your reputation is at stake.
And I think John Kasich wins it by a nose.
Okay. Thanks very much. That's Dan Rivers, who is the mid-morning host on WKBN in Youngstown, Ohio, one of America's great talk radio stations and a longtime affiliate of Beyond the Beltway. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion, and we'll hear a little bit about Donald Trump. And we want to thank our Democrats for being with us tonight, Al Riley and Dan Johnson. We thank you all for being with us tonight on Beyond the Beltway.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sit cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
We continue on Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us. And Doug Ibendahl joins us. He is a Donald Trump supporter. He's also an attorney in Chicago and activist in the Republican Party. Doug, you've heard the description of what happened Friday night. You were there as well. Would you change or disagree with anything that I have stated? Because I want to get your political perspective.
Your report was very good. I really can't add that much. I did hear you say that it wasn't a riot. I guess I won't disagree with that. I don't know if there's a technical legal term for riot, but it was
lots of fights and lots of blood.
Bruce, it was very close. My first analysis when I came back and I posted on Facebook, did a very short description. I said the closest thing I could compare it to, I was too young then, I don't remember it firsthand, but I've seen the tapes of the 1968 riots in front of the Hilton at the 1968 Chicago Democratic Convention. It was comparable to that. Now, one big key difference one big key difference in this case, the police were nothing but professional, and thank you to those guys. Now, for my full – I've done a full eyewitness account and my analysis of that event at my political news site, RepublicanNewsWatch.com, and my top story there, Donald Trump stands alone against violent Chicago hate groups. That's at RepublicanNewsWatch.com.
Now, you are not pleased with the way that the other Republican candidates have responded.
Specifically, of
those that have responded, is there one that you're more upset with than the others?
I think they all had about the same tone. And sorry, Janine, I think that Cruz was probably a little more aggressively trying to take political advantage of that violent mob Friday night in Chicago. But I think all three really missed the boat, and I think it was a little embarrassing for them. And frankly, shameful to see that their first knee-jerk reaction before knowing any of the facts was to side with that mob of violent thugs. Let's call them that. I mean, there were probably some college kids there who just came, you know, fun, really wanted to do to protest.
I saw a few people that I was, but not overall. Now, before we spend the whole segment talking about it, which I don't want, I want to go back to Jeannie. Jeannie, you're an Illinois state representative from Wheaton, Illinois. Mm-hmm. You're for Ted Cruz, as we've discussed earlier in the program. You are also for Ted Cruz because you're very fearful of what Donald Trump could do for the Republican Party. Share that with us. What is your concern for Donald Trump if he's the nominee?
I think he splits the base. I think that nobody's...
Well,
I don't think that anybody is confident that he is able to govern on day one. I don't know. He's got no track record other than, going after people for eminent domain and things like that.
Well, that's ridiculous.
No, that's not ridiculous at all. It's actually something that he tried to do.
Let her finish.
The truth is that, we're at the point where we need a constitutional conservative, somebody who understands rule of law, not rule of men. Well, Donald Trump has proven with his antics, with his speech and his rhetoric, he is a rule of a man. I mean, the first thought that comes in his head goes right out of his mouth without any thought in between.
I want to go back to you, Doug, and elaborate on what Jeannie has just said by my own question, which is, are you confident that Donald Trump would be able to bring the party together and bring to his cause in November a large number of what was recently described as suburban soccer moms and people that listen to public broadcasting, and they're a little softer and kinder and gentler? They may be Republicans, but they are scared of Donald Trump. How do you get those, not just exclusively women, but a large portion of women, how do you get them back?
It doesn't matter what I think, because we have a ton of empirical evidence now. We've had 23, 24 states down now, maybe 25 counting Oklahoma yesterday, that little thing they had. We have empirical proof now. Donald Trump is growing this party. Republican turnout records are being shattered across the country in every state, in the West, the South, the North, Midwest. Donald Trump is the only one who is expanding this party. He's doing what these do-nothing politicians have just been talking about for decades. He's doing it. Some of the do-nothings are jealous about it, and that's too bad. But the simple fact is people see that Donald Trump is the only one in this race who's actually accomplished something. He's a builder. He's the only one who's actually employed something.
I want to go back to my question.
Oh, I don't know.
In every state, The majority of people that voted against Donald Trump.
They're not voting. They're voting for somebody else. That doesn't mean they're voting against Donald Trump.
My question is, if you're getting 34, 35%, maybe 36%, maybe even 40%, how do you get from there to 51%?
I would rather start with a candidate who's starting with 40% in the primary than one who's starting with 10 or single digits like John Kasich is in the 24 states so far.
Well, I think this is going to be interesting as the field narrows, as it becomes more a Cruz versus Trump reality in the later states. I think that it's going to be interesting. And so when you go to a convention and there's been a lot of talk about the brokered convention and what's going to happen on the second ballot. Well, I do think that we're going to have a problem here as Republicans. The closer Donald Trump is to 50% or a majority, not just a simple plurality, it'll be more difficult to deny Donald Trump anything. But if he only is able to garner maybe 33% or 35%, whatever that number is, then you have the ability to maybe go into more of a brokered convention. Those are the rules.
I want to go to Mike Miller. Mike, I want you to share your concerns for Donald Trump if he's the nominee of the Republican Party.
There's at least two major things. One is I'm an economist by training and by practice. And his economic policies, I simply don't agree with him. His views on trade and so forth, I just don't buy it. The second thing is there's no filter between his brain and his mouth. And I actually have more admiration for the man.
I don't know what that means.
Now, we don't always say everything the first thing that comes into my mind. I could think something about you, and I could blurt out the first thing that I think about you, and I would never do such things. In terms of why would I say something that could be hurtful or stupid, or he just doesn't seem to have a filter. And so he says things like, should we take out these protesters on a stretcher? And that's a silly thing to say. But his economic policies, his idea of putting a 45% tariff on Chinese goods, that's preposterous. I'm sorry. It makes
actually Mitt Romney talked about it in the last election too.
He was wrong too. Being a comms for free trade.
It's called a negotiation tactic. And the one great thing about Donald Trump is we've got a man here who literally wrote the book on negotiation. So you start. The point is, you start talking about a 45% tariff. You send a message that doesn't mean you're going to end up there. But where Trump is successful, and what these career politicians don't understand, you don't start off with the Democrat talking points. Because if you start off with the Democratic talking points, you're going to end up with a Democrat result.
If there's any more of an insurgency, it's Ted Cruz and his campaign as well. I mean, he's stood up against the establishment. He's the only one who has done that repeatedly. I mean, in the heat of the battle. Look at
Janine.
Wait a minute, Doug. You've not been elected. I've been elected. I've sat in Republican caucuses in the state of Illinois, and I can tell you the intense pressure that is in there when you're a true conservative and you know that your party's heading the wrong direction. It takes a lot of guts and courage, and Pateta has done that. Now, let me tell you one thing that we can all agree on. It better be a Republican and not Hillary Clinton. The last person we want making at 3 a.m. to take a call on foreign policy is her, because she couldn't make it at 5 p.m. during Benghazi. And we have got to agree.
Friday night when Donald Trump was having a free rally for everyone, he invited everyone. Some people, some thugs took advantage of his hospitality. That's too bad. But that same night, your guy, Ted Cruz, the guy who said he was anti-establishment, was over at the Palmer House Hilton kissing the rings of the old Republican establishment. Give me a break. You just can't say these things when they're demonstrably untrue.
No, that is not true.
That is true. That's where he was. He was at a high dollar fundraiser, correct?
He needs to raise money. That's great. I'm glad he was there.
Behind closed doors. No press allowed.
He also showed up at other events. He's got five free events tomorrow in Illinois. Five free ones all around the state.
He is begging the establishment for help. He is begging the establishment for help.
Doug, let me ask you a question. You mentioned a free event. Was it a mistake to have free online access to that?
No, absolutely not. This has been a success. He has these events all over the country. They're very successful. He had one at the same day.
Would there be fewer interruptions if he had a more sophisticated screening process.
No, that's not what he's about. He's opening up this party. He's opening up the political process. And you know, Donald Trump trusts people. I mean, it's too bad
Jeannie.
It's too bad that some thugs are taking advantage of his hospitality. But other cities, other states all over the country, including St. Louis earlier that very day at noon, he had a big rally in St. Louis at noon. I mean, he has protesters at every event, but they were able to keep order. It is very, very embarrassing for Chicago that they let this happen. And here's a very important point that everyone is missing. That mob, that rally or riot, whatever you want to call it, on Friday night in Chicago, that really wasn't even about Donald Trump per se. It is not Donald Trump's fault that he is people are trying to take advantage of his popularity and media exposure and glom onto him. But the same violent anarchists or thugs, whatever you want to call them, those people were also behaving like violent anarchist thugs before Donald Trump even got into his race.
I think everybody agrees. But here's the point. As I said in my conversation a little while ago, when you have a rally that's free, open, online access, and you have it in a sanctuary city on a progressive college campus with a lot of minority students who has hired Bill Ayers, when you do that and you give free access to the doors, you shouldn't be surprised when people
You should be surprised. Because that'd be like saying, well, why should
you be surprised at the way that that's the way that anarchists act?
Why should anyone?
MoveOn.org. You knew that MoveOn.org was organizing the protests. You shouldn't have been surprised by what happened.
Should we just declare then that no Republican Trump supporter should ever come to Chicago because it's a hostile environment? I mean, maybe you should. Is that what you're saying? That's pretty sad.
It is sad, but it may be the truth.
No, absolutely not.
1-800-723-8289. Back shortly from Chicago. If we have to leave you now, we'll see you next week. But most people will stay right where you are for another full segment. I'm Bruce Dumont.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
8 years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. A reminder that election night, from 7 to 11 o'clock Central Time, I will be anchoring the election night coverage on WIND AM 560, The Answer. And again, it's this Tuesday night. Again, join me. Again, wherever you're listening around the country, you can get it on your, on your phone, on your iPhone, or any phone you've got. Again, it's AM 560 WIND in Chicago. And again, I'm going to be joined by, listen to this for a great, I'm going to be joined by Joe Walsh. I'm going to be joined by Wes Bleed, a great newsman covering Chicago, and also Nick Kacharubas from DePaul University, who's been a regular guest. He's been helping us a lot with a lot of preparation. And again, I want to remind you, we will not just be focusing on Illinois. Obviously, that we will be talking a lot about Illinois, but we will be talking about all of the big races in Ohio and Florida and North Carolina and Missouri. So for full election coverage, it's WIND AM 560 on Sunday night. And again, we'll be taking telephone calls as well, so you don't have to just sit there and listen to what the experts are saying. You can call back and you can challenge us. Tuesday, March 15th, election night coverage, AM 560, The Answer. Wherever you're listening, tune in and call in. Now, also, by the way, in our conversation with Dan Rivers of WKBN, he talked about the most recent poll in Ohio that has Kasich and Trump tied at 33%. He couldn't remember the source. He's texted it to me. It's the CBS poll, the latest CBS poll. Kasich and Trump tied at 33%. Wow. Ted Cruz at 27%. That's
wow,
big
that's
news.
All close.
Again, it is the goal of it's the goal of Donald Trump to drive a stake into Marco Rubio's heart and John Kasich's heart, because at that point, again, a lot is going to be in the rearview mirror. And again, he's expected to do well in Illinois, and he's 20 points leading in North Carolina. He's got a small lead, 7-point lead in Missouri. That should be a good state for Ted Cruz. But again, Tuesday night, I do believe that we're going to know the Republican nominee for president. And again, that's why we want you to tune in to AM 560, where you can now hear this program every Sunday night from 10 o'clock until midnight.
So I was just, for the record, for that prediction to be true, that means it has to be Donald Trump. I mean, that's no spoiler alert.
No, that is not as you're,
it would have to be Donald
you're
Trump.
Absolutely right.
And the alternative would be a brokered convention.
The alternative would be a brokered convention.
Those of us are hoping for that.
Well, it's actually a contested convention. There's no honest broker here.
While you're here, I want to say to you, Doug, something that I said when you were not here, and I like to talk face to face with people if I say something.
Sure.
I raised the concern that I have about Donald Trump's safety, because he's out there. He's saying so much. He obviously has touched a nerve, and politicians who touch nerves sometimes have an unpleasant end. As a Trump supporter, are you worried about that?
I'm worried about it every day. Some nut jumped over the railing yesterday at an Ohio rally and actually got a hand on his pant leg before the Secret Service tackled him. And their stories now. We've looked at his Facebook page, and he had YouTube videos out there where I don't know if he's an ISIS exactly, but it's probably fair to say he's a sympathizer. He's got YouTube videos of himself when he's not standing on the American flag protesting, then he's highlighting the ISIS flag. And I'm very worried.
That's why I offer that concern in context to the question I asked you a little while ago, is that it seems to me there could be a better screening process. In other words, knowing who is going into the hall. So when you have an open invitation, it's an open invitation to disruption and protests and potential violence and potential of getting somebody in there that able to get to him.
Well, kudos to Trump. I mean, he trusts people, and he is trying to, I mean, he is expanding the party. I mean, we can't just talk about expanding the Republican Party. We've actually got to show that we're doing it, and Donald Trump is doing that. And I think he is putting himself, we saw Friday, there are a lot of hateful nut jobs out there. And
should there have been someone in a security detail hired by Trump when he saw hundreds, if not, I don't want to say thousands, several hundred people going into that rally who obviously didn't really look like they were Donald Trump fans?
Well, then he gets
because
trouble,
of the
starts,
way they were dressed.
He starts getting in trouble.
It's profiling. There's no question about it.
Yeah, you can't do that. But also, I would say, thank goodness he does use metal detectors now. I went to the previous Illinois rally. The only other one was in Springfield in November. Yep. That was the last rally he had before he got Secret Service protection and the same deal with the free tickets. There was no one was even taking tickets, and there was no metal detectors at all. So fortunately, that's changed. Security is much better now.
One last question. How do you bring – he said that he's going to be a unifier. How do you bring the party together after the vitriol that has been spread in all different directions, with Kasich even adding to it?
Well, that's for those people to decide. There's been a lot of hateful rhetoric. What we've seen with Mitt Romney going out and actually attacking the Republican front runner, it is unprecedented. Some of the things that these people are seeing, Kasich, Rubio, Cruz, all siding with the violent, hateful mob in Chicago instead of standing with Donald Trump and the First Amendment, is disgraceful. All three of those other candidates have disqualified themselves from any public office in the future, even dog catcher. But, if these sore losers, if these nasty, jealous people if you want to call them Republicans, if they're going to be sore losers and nasty about it, then go with God. Don't let the door hit you on the way out, because Donald Trump is going to replace you with 100 new and better people.
All right, on that point, Jeannie Ives, you're going to be introducing Ted Cruz tomorrow. Give the specifics if people want to come see you.
Yes.
And Ted Cruz tomorrow.
Ted's five stops in Illinois, but I'll be in Glen Ellen on Butterfield Road at the Abington at 12:30. Ted Cruz will be there.
And as we said earlier in the program, Hillary Clinton is here on the west side in the morning. And Bernie Sanders is going to be at the Auditorium Theater tomorrow night. And Ted Cruz and Donald Trump is finishing up in Youngstown, Ohio. And John Kasich is hanging on for his dear life in Youngstown, Ohio, and the rest of the Buckeye State. And again, I'm going to try to hit as many of these rallies tomorrow. I don't know if anything is going to upstage what I witnessed Friday night at the UIC. But again, I'll be there and I'll be reporting on it again Tuesday night, election night, from 7 to 11 o'clock Central Time on AM 560. The Answer. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv.
8 years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.